Hi there, welcome. We are ready to get started.
Boy, I didn't work it off.
Okay, this is session number 221. Mitt Romney, Brainy Wonk, representative of the people, or Brazen Waffler. We're pleased to have here Ron Scott, who's a journalist. He's written extensively about Mitt Romney. He's worked for Time Magazine, was one of the founding editors of People. He reported for both Salt Lake City Daily Newspapers and the United Press, and he's written a lot about Mitt Romney, including what has become a classic piece on him in Sunstone a year ago. He was a missionary to New England under Boyd K. Packer and Truman Madsen, and grew up here in Salt Lake City. We don't have a respondent to this session, so we'll be taking questions from the audience. Unfortunately, we had to turn off the microphones because of feedback issues. They are, however, still recording. You may want to move to the front because they'll project, but we won't be able to use the microphones to speak. When you want to ask questions after Ron has finished, please use this microphone here so as to pick it up for the tape. And please turn off your cell phones, your pagers, and remember the book sale is just down the line. Okay, Ron, thank you.
Thanks for coming out this morning. Years ago when I was writing for People magazine, I was working on my third and a longer piece on Muhammad Ali, and I had the occasion to travel with him to Harvard, where... Oh, good. Where, when all else fails, pardon me for a second here. You'll get it. You think so? It's tough growing old in the computer age, let me tell you. Where he spoke to the senior class of 1975, and it was really a sight to behold Ali in one of the big law amphitheaters in the Harvard Law School, surrounded by 1,000 or so graduating seniors. It was a free ticket to Harvard seniors, but that night they were hawking the tickets for about $300 a pop. And as he faced the crowd, he shot the graduating seniors a one of those sneering glances that, if you recall, Muhammad Ali, that only he could really pull off. And he said, imagine me, a high school dropout, speaking here at this great seat of learning. And they told me I'd be speaking to future doctors and lawyers and senators and perhaps even a president of the United States. And he paused and he glared at them again and he said, so I didn't bring no notes. I have been a peruser of Sunstone since its earliest days. You were right. And although I didn't know him well, Scott Kenny and I both survived missionary experiences under Boyd K. Packer. And so a decade or so later, when a friend told me that Scott had launched a magazine that was quote and unquote more up your alley, I was quite proud of Scott, although I never did figure out what my friend meant by saying it was more up my alley than Dialogue. Before Sunstone's second editor, Peggy Fletcher Stack, added Stack to her last name, she blew down the Connecticut Gold Coast trying to separate some well-heeled Mormons from their cash. I was not one of her targets, but I was invited to tag along because I knew something about publishing, and more importantly, I'd recently become a single dad, and you know how Mormons are about those kinds of things. She was single as well. Suffice it to say, I know to whom I speak. Therefore, unlike Muhammad Ali, I have brought along an entire notebook. Not that notebook. I mean this one. I think that's my cell phone ringing. My wife wants to know where I am. So So even though I have a notebook, please forgive me if I tremble a little bit. I know you're a tough crowd, and I hope you'll go easy on it. Let's get started. Did I show you that slide? This is my representation of you, the tough crowd. High in the sun zone. So to begin with, context and nuance are more important this election year than ever before. They will be important in the years ahead. This is no time to be voting for a candidate because of a clever slogan or because his views of the world are so sharply defined that he leaves no room for negotiation. The fact of the matter is, the world we live in is not sharply defined. The view out there is blurrier than it's ever been in our lifetimes. Doing good in one way almost always means that you're doing bad in another, and so on and so forth. And the same is true around the world. It's also true closer to home. It has always been important to understand that what candidates are saying, and this year in particular, this election year in particular, it's important to understand what they are not saying. A lot of what Mitt Romney says can be discovered in what he doesn't say. 2 years ago, my piece on Mitt and Sunstone took notes of Mitt's modus operandi. The summary was based on interviews with several friends and former business associates who at the time were disappointed that politics had forced him to compromise, at least for the moment. This is a composite quote that was in the magazine a couple years ago. The fact is, he always tells the truth. He is extraordinarily precise about what he says and how he says it. If you were to go back and parse the actual sentences he used in 1993 to define his support for the right of women to choose, I'll bet you discover his position hasn't changed much, and you could read the rest of the quote yourself. Like Clinton, Romney expects you to know that the answers to important, forgive the split in the wall there, the answers to important questions are always complex. Therefore, it's important to carefully define and understand what is. As a journalist, I have always tried to report what is. Pardon me for a minute.
Would you do me a favor and find my phone and turn it off?
And then after you're done doing that, would you mind carrying my golf clubs a little bit? So as I was saying before my phone so rudely interrupted me, as a journalist, I always tried to connect the dots. I always felt it was more important to connect the dots to provide the context for a quote than to actually provide a verbatim quote, with the exceptions being when verbatim adds to the clarity of what the person was saying. I returned to Zion very briefly in the late 70s to evaluate an interesting job opportunity here and to figure out whether Tom Wolfe was right. he was. But while in Salt Lake, I wrote a newspaper piece on guns and hunting that made people here assume I'd been born and raised in Manhattan and should return there about as fast as my red Peugeot station wagon could carry me, provided that I was not ambushed by vigilantes in Echo Canyon. 3 decades later, I have to admit, the lead I wrote was a pretty intemperate lead. It went like this. Some perfectly decent people live in the valley I used to call home. They are a lot like me, actually. Their lawns have crabgrass. Their kids wear braces, play violin, and dig soccer. They have cricks in their backs, holes in their socks, and they'll forget to prepare this week's Sunday school lesson until 10:30 Saturday night. Should an alley cat dart into the street, they'd risk personal injury to avoid a encounter. Yet, as the sun rises on any given Saturday in any October, these people, some of my dearest friends, will send a bullet hurtling into a wide-eyed animal's brain and call it sport. I share this with you so you will understand why I was utterly floored when Mitt Romney said he had been a hunter all of his life, a veritable latter-day Teddy Roosevelt. Although I think Teddy had a better tailor. In disbelief, I dashed off a column that ended this way. Like the irrepressible Lothario, who loved every girl he was near, Mitt's eagerness to please practically every audience he encounters often leads to rather shameless pandering. His recent enrollment in the National Rifle Association, followed by a boast that he had been a lifelong hunter, gave headline writers and humorists lots of ammunition. The nation needs to hear what Romney has to say, nuanced and carefully parsed though his ideas may be. It would be regrettable if his intelligent voice was silenced by a dodgy claim that he has long enjoyed hunting rodents, which were Mitt not splitting hairs, are Lepus californicus to zoologists and jackrabbits to the rest of us. Had I signed up for that refresher course in biology for dummies, I might have been reminded that Lepus californicus, that I occasionally hunted on priesthood corn outings out here, was not a country cousin of the rodent photographed on the sidewalks of New York. An angry reader, an obvious fan of the governor, set me straight after dashing off a lame defense of Mitt's lifelong love of things that go bang. The letter concluded, anyway, Mitt said he enjoyed hunting varmints, not rodents. Had I done my homework, I would have known that the kind of varmints that Mitt hunted all of his life, varmints like this one, this is the kind of varmint he hunted all of his life. It's right there in the fine print. You'll notice that the predators of this particular varmint includes Mitt Romney. A friend of mine in Boston, That's an example of why it's important to pay attention to the fine print, to understand how he parses his words and chooses his words. A friend of mine in Boston, the self-described socialist, a healthcare policy expert, sought me out because he wanted to tell me how impressed he was by Mitt's grasp of the healthcare issues. He had also been in a group of healthcare leaders that then First Lady Hillary Clinton assembled in a futile attempt and somewhat acrimonious effort to design an effective universal health care plan. And this is quoting him. You'd expect a consultant like Mitt would have a bean counter's view of the problems, but Mitt's went far beyond that, drilling down to arcane payer and reimbursement issues and protocols. Mitt was listening carefully to all the experts in the room, unlike Hillary. And by the way, I happen to be a fan of Hillary, but unlike Hillary, he wasn't trying to prove that he was the smartest person in the meeting. Surprisingly, he's every bit the policy wonk that Bill Clinton was, but without the turbocharged libido. He actually used a different word, but I left it out, given the tough crowd here. Romney also seems to have changed his mind on top of the mind social issues about as often as my great grandfather and his added new wives. By the way, in the course of doing research from the book, one of the interesting things that I discovered was that I am his second cousin. And so is Richard. Richard is still here too. There he is in the back of the room. We all descend from Parley P. Pratt. But in true Mormon fashion, Mitt has a different great-great-grandmother than I do. So on the short list of things that I've come up with that where he's changed his mind, I'm gonna put guns and gambling aside because he's all over the lot on all of them and has been since 1994. I will say this, so far as I know, he neither gambles nor hunts, not even those pesky varmints. You've probably heard the story about his epiphany on the abortion issue in reaction to a stem cell research alleged cavalier words about this quote-unquote disposing of leftover embryos created in vitro, followed by his conclusion that Roe v. Wade had gone entirely too far. On stem cell research, it's my view that his position is foggy at best. His opposition seems connected to his opposition to abortion on demand. I think, for the moment, his position on stem cell research is not well-formed. For instance, he does not seem to understand, at least he's not communicating that to the outside world, that in vitro fertilization procedures always produce many more embryos than are needed to impregnate a woman, and that those extra embryos have to be disposed of in some way, some morally responsible way. Net-net, without getting into a lot more detail, I see lots of middle ground for him to land on, and my sense is he's trying to find that middle ground on the stem cell research issue. On gay rights, you've seen him go from being out front on gay rights in 1994 and 2002 to becoming a national leader in the opposition to same-sex marriage. In fact, some of those crazy conservatives have charged that Mitt may have had a hand in creating the controversy to begin with, simply to give him an issue that he could play back to Christian conservatives in the nation. This move to the right on the gay rights issue has put him in some strange company. Some of those crazy conservatives who are making the charges that I just articulated, and people who are not just opposed to same-sex marriage, but people who really don't care much for the needs of gay men and lesbian women. And this was taken at a rally outside of the State House in Boston last spring. If the adage you can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses applies here, one could infer that Mitt Romney inexplicably now opposes gays and lesbians across the board, period. As understandable as it would be to draw that inference, and that may be precisely the inference Mitt's handlers hope Christian conservatives draw in the run-up to the primary election season, ultimately, it's my belief that it's not a correct inference. But don't take my word for it. Here's what he told Chris Matthews about same-sex civil unions, a concept he supported way, way back in 1993. And I guess you can't read it, but I'll read it to you. Well, I would rather have neither, to tell you the truth. I'd rather have domestic partnership benefits such as hospital visitation rights, etc. I don't want civil unions or gay marriage. However, he gets down to the bottom here. I don't want to see... Of course, if we find ourselves in a setting where the only choice is between civil union and marriage, I will prefer civil unions, but I would prefer neither. That's classic Mitt. And what he's done here is he's given himself plenty of room to land on. In saying this, he outlines how he operates. And it's a very skillful way for a politician to operate. He has his personal opinions. He tries to avoid making waves, never mind last week in Iowa. He's willing to carefully and precisely stake out lots of turf. He is pragmatic. He knows when to hold them and knows when to fold them. He is usually open to compromise, and he wants to be a good neighbor. In doing so, he sort of confirms that his roots, like mine, do trace back to the Rocky Mountains. Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above, but don't fence me in. The party's leaking out, at least for now, is his opinion as to whether the U.S. Constitution prescribes a right way. In endorsing the needs for a constitutional amendment protecting marriage, he and other supporters acknowledge backhandedly that the U.S. Constitution, as written, probably protects same-sex marriage. Those judges in Massachusetts may well be activists in their own right, but their interpretation of the Constitution as currently written, was not an example of judicial activism. The big question is this: will he bring us together, or will he drive us further apart? I think Mitt's statement to Matthews also reflects his willingness to listen and represent the consensus views of the electorate, but whether or not the consensus views agree with his personal opinions. In that sense, Mitt Romney may be the consummate representative of the people. In fact, his willingness to represent the consensus view may explain why he seems to have changed his opinion on some key hot-button social issues. As I was there in 1993 when he rolled out the surprising positions on abortion, birth control, and gay rights, and in 2005, I was the first national journalist to note that he had shifted those positions, I have at least a sense of the history and, to a degree, the context for some of those events. Frankly, I was surprised in November of 1993, before he announced for the U.S. Senate, when he told me of his position favoring personal choice with regard to abortion. He was my state president. I knew full well what that could mean. I was not in the least bit surprised to learn that his position did not sit well with some church leaders, and that his decision had, quote unquote, singed some bridges. No doubt his rescue of the Mormon Olympics put out some of the fires. In 1993 and today, this fact is clear. The consensus view in Massachusetts supports choice. If you want to represent the people statewide, you must support choice or at least agree not to be an obstructionist. It's that simple. If you want to be a doctrinaire pro-life candidate, don't run for office in statewide office in Massachusetts. No one says that you have to stay in Massachusetts forever, least of all Mitt. Mitt's run against Senator Ted was an interesting and eye-opening time for Mormons. Of course, some, actually many, were outraged at his stance on choice, gays, and gambling. They figured Mitt had lost his way and would soon be dispatched to the buffetings of Satan and all that. Of course, that never happened. Still others regarded him as a living example of how Latter-day Saints could adapt to the world around them without compromising their personal beliefs and practices. Some thought it was evidence that the church was rapidly becoming more inclusive, was pitching a much bigger tent. The only thing different this time around are the constituents, the people who will decide whether or not he gets the Republican nomination. They are a very, very different group, needless to say, than the people of Massachusetts. Many of them are fierce opponents of abortion for all reasons, birth control, sex education, gun laws, and you know the rest of the list. To be nominated, to win the nomination, Romney needs to reveal the side of him that meshes with their beliefs. I should add a side of him that has always been there, guns and hunting notwithstanding. At the least, he must assure them that he hears their concerns and will represent them well, should compromises be necessary, as they surely will be. One could argue that the voters themselves are looking for a candidate this time around who is nearly perfect or very close to it. But the fact of the matter is, you're supposed to laugh.
Oh, you can. I'm sorry. This cartoon shows that the wise men arrived in the stable, and he said, "A baby? Damn, we were hoping for Barack Obama." And this one, which I can't even read, says, "Jesus Christ? Question mark. Hell no, we're looking for the return of Ronald Reagan."
Did everybody hear that? So, fact of the matter is, perfection is not likely to come anytime soon. And if I'm right on that fact, Romney didn't need an epiphany to justify his hard switch on abortion, because he'd always been opposed to it personally. He's just choosing not to emphasize that side of him. He chose not to emphasize that side of him 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And if I'm right about that, perhaps you'll agree with me when I suggest that his views as the election season winds on, and we're still, it's a long, long way from this September to next November, as the song says, modified. As the election season winds on, it's my personal belief that he will come to represent the consensus views of the people who will elect him in November of 2008. Historically, my personal politics drift toward the likes of Paul Tsongas, and lately Chris Dodd, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards. But truthfully, wouldn't it be refreshing to have a president who actually listened to the voters, who put their needs ahead of his own, who recognized that his job was to represent the will of the people, and he did so consistently. I have been windy. I want to leave plenty of time for your questions, so I'll close by cutting to a few responses I made recently to questions asked me by other journalists. They're a pretty motley crew, as you know. Question number one, is Mormonism a problem for Mitt in the primaries? And so, those of you, how many of you were here last night, by the way? Okay, well, if this repeats, forgive me. It's tough to go on last. Is Mormonism a problem for Mitt only in the primaries? Mormonism is becoming less and less of an issue each day. Before the first primary, it may have become quite inconsequential. Shall we pray? I cannot imagine that any Democrat in his right mind would attempt to make an issue out of Mitt's religion, and overt attacks from other people will backfire as they did on John McCain. And Mitt is very well organized to combat those kinds of things. Do you think that Mitt will win the Republican nomination? Yes, at least he will be the vice presidential candidate. But keep this in mind. Back in 1968, I wore shoes, a sport jacket, and ties, just like about like I dress right now. I bathed regularly. I didn't smoke dope. Nevertheless, I thought Gene McCarthy would win the Democratic nomination even after his campaign bigwigs asked me in July to arrange a meeting between his spokeswoman, the sexy actress Julie Newmar, and who had been featured in Playboy 2 months before with President David O. McKay. Earlier in the year, I'd been a George Romney fan. The net-net of that is, they're not going to be hiring me to be the bookmaker at Churchill Downs anytime soon. What are his strongest assets? In the order of importance, they are organization, organization, and organization. And the fourth one is money. The Romney organization seems well-oiled, almost bulletproof. And very importantly, if Ann Romney remains healthy, she will be a very, very powerful asset. She humanizes Mitt in ways that are hard to explain. She gives him heart. While their love story, their success as parents and lovers, seems torn from a fairy tale, it is as substantive and genuine as it is refreshing. Next question. How has he done on defusing the Mormon issue? Until last week, Mitt personally had done a perfectly lousy job of defusing the Mormon issue. Then he took off the gloves with that fairly conservative and poorly informed talk show host in Iowa. It was an impressive exchange. If you haven't seen it, take time to see it. Until then, Mitt wisely stayed above the fray, giving people of goodwill time to come to their senses, and a variety of pundits, reporters, and thought leaders, and civil rights advocates, a rich opportunity to wax indignant, even grandiloquent, about religious prejudice and shameless bigotry. And that's where I think, as you know, if you were here last night, that's where I think it ought to remain. He should not give that speech defining his Mormonism. Might there be a point at which his Mormonism stops detracting people from considering him and actually becomes an asset? I personally hope that no one votes for him simply because he is a Mormon, but I suppose that some people will, just as some people voted for Jack Kennedy because he was a Catholic. Eventually, more people are likely to throw up their hands in disgust and say, Enough already of the Mormon bashing. Let's focus on the real issues, the important challenges that face the U.S. in the years ahead. Iraq, the Middle East, healthcare, education, American competitiveness in the and the rising economic powerhouses of China, India, yes, even Canada. We need to focus more our attentions to resolving the AIDS crisis, the pandemic in Africa, not to mention the terror, strife, hunger, and numbing healthcare problems of the world and the country. Another question. In November of 2008, is there any chance that significant numbers of voters will vote for the other guy simply because they refuse to support a Mormon? My answer, a significant number? Not likely. It's hard to envision a religious person opposing him simply because of his faith. Some polls, however, suggest that hardened atheists would have a hard time voting for him or any other true believer. But it isn't unique to his being Mormon. Of course, the Mormon issue would be completely diffused if the Democratic nominee chooses Harry Reid as a running mate. Or, if Chris Dodd gets the nomination, the Dodds of Connecticut from that two-cult family, he's a Catholic and she's a Mormon. Should Mormonism become a major issue in the general election, I doubt that it will, liberals, politicians, columnists, civil rights activists, and organizations like the Anti-Defamation League will object loudly. I am quite aware that Jimmy Carter, a very religious and moderately liberal president, the man that I happen to like personally a lot, tried to make Mormonism an issue in 1976 when he was challenged by Mo Udall. You may remember that Mo, that self-described one-eyed Mormon senator from Arizona who was too funny to be president, I think Mo would have been a much better president, by the way, and I also think that since then Carter's repented. And I too repent for rambling on far too long. The time is now yours for questions. One small request, you know me, and you know where I live. As you stand to ask questions, if you'd introduce yourself, and if you like, tell us a little bit about your connection to the campaign and the church. But anticipating one obvious question from fans of Harry Reid and Chris Dodd, I'll answer that one first. Yes, you can be a Mormon and a Democrat too, even a bleeding heart liberal. Thanks for your time.
We have about 25 minutes for questions, if you'll come and use this microphone. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Dave McKell, and I was reading the New York Times this morning.
Sandbagger?
In the op-ed, David Brooks, an op-ed piece entitled The Straw Poll Man on Romney and his last words, and he was really talking about that the real Romney should step out instead of pandering to the right wing. But he said, I suspect the Romney campaign would do even better if it let the real Romney play out. But actually, the question I have for you, and I want you to speculate, you were kind of very humble, and you're saying you made predictions that were totally in error politically, but I want you to kind of step out on this. I'm going to create a scenario that Clinton will be the Democratic nominee, Romney will be the Republican nominee. What kind of a campaign do you think that will be? Just speculate on your from your background.
That's a great question, and I think in part will come down to who is her running mate. She in many respects faces the same problem that Romney allegedly faces, and that is that there's a sizable piece of the electorate that won't vote for her simply because she's Hillary Clinton. They're just flat out opposed to her, and it's a big number. In fact, there's talk right now that Harry Reid's trying to talk her into withdrawing from the race and becoming the Senate Majority Leader simply because they're looking at the numbers and they're saying she can't get elected. We need to do something. But she's going to win. She's clearly going to win the Democratic nomination in my mind. I think it would be a pretty good and very tough campaign. The Clintons are fierce campaigners. They're every bit as well organized as the Romneys are. They've got their true squads all over they've been through this before, so they're really experienced, and Romney's there too. So it would be a match of equals. But I do not think that Hillary, in particular, would visit the Mormon issue at all. Somebody last night said, "Well, they're going to be these side groups that are the Swift Belt people are going to attack Romney, and they're going to do the same thing to Hillary, of course." And the answer is, "Well, that's a given in any campaign." And the question is, how quickly do you respond to it, and how effectively do you respond to it, and more importantly, how well have you planned for it? And my sense is, on both sides of the aisle, in that kind of a campaign, they're well prepared. So it would be hard fought. And I keeping in mind that I picked McCarthy and Romney's dad in 68, I would pick Romney to win that battle, ultimately.
Hi, I've got a wide-ranging questions. I'll make them brief and things. In South Carolina, twice Mitt has said he'd like to put Jeb Bush on as his running mate. That alone makes him not want to vote for him. Have you heard other candidates he suggested besides Jeb Bush that he wants as his running mate, ideally?
I haven't. I've heard the Jeb Bush. I've heard the Jeb Bush talk, and I think what he said to correct that is he would be one of the people that ought to be on the short list of people I would consider to be vice president. The Bushes, though, as I understand, are very tightly aligned with the Romney camp. I think actually one of George Bush's daughters is LDS, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that.
No, I've never heard that.
I have.
They're Jack Mormons if they are.
Well, you know,
they're not
a bad group. but the answer to the question is, I think what's happening here is the Bushes and the Romneys have been good friends for years and years and years, going back to when George was governor of Michigan, mm-hmm. and there's a handoff going on of the Bush political organization, which Jeb is the inheritor of that, and many of them have signed on with the Romney campaign, and those aren't bad guys to have on your side if you're a Republican and you want to have clout in the South. And I viewed it as being a way to get those people enlisted in Florida, which is going to be a key primary state in the South. South Carolina's going to be tough in that regard.
Did you hear the Chris Matthews Hartball interview where they mentioned that Romney's inconsistency vis-a-vis the judicial system? He wants a full pardon for Scooter Libby, saying that the prosecutor inflamed the jury, and sometimes it's up to an executive branch to overturn bad decisions. And yet when he was governor of Massachusetts, there was a guy who was 18 years old, shot a neighbor accident with a BB gun, got a felony, went and served in Iraq. Now he's 28, he wants to be in the Boston Police Department. He has to have that expunged, and Romney said, "No way, I'll never overturn a jury verdict." Inconsistent. I just hate when politicians play that kind of thing.
I don't have a great answer for your question.
And also, he's against stem cell research, and his wife has MS.
I think I mentioned that. I think my view is his position on stem cell research is pretty fuzzy, and it's still being formed. And I think he's trying to grips with the trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one thing you can count on with Mitt is he's a fast study. He looks at the big picture. He's a consultant by nature, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
And they make very pragmatic decisions. And at each step along the way, you'll see him reach some pragmatic decisions. And I expect he's going to come out with some kind of progressive position on stem cell research. And you can play out in your own mind how that may reshape fine-tune his position on choice.
Now, I do want to be fair and balanced. I've been critical in the last three issues. I think one thing he's done wonderful that hasn't got enough media attention, and I don't know why he's not touting his own horn, is that Whitey Bulger is number two on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, only behind Osama bin Laden. This government has spent more time and money trying to get this guy. His brother was chairman of University of Massachusetts and president. The Kennedys wouldn't touch him. They said he was too big in the Irish community. Neither party in Massachusetts would touch him. Mitt got in there and fired him right away and said, "You've got to answer this. You've been leaking FBI memos. You've been talking to the corrupt cops that got convicted in this case." I don't know why he doesn't tout it, similar to what Kucinich. 30 years ago, he fired a guy who was an organized crime on the sewer board. He doesn't want to touch that. because he said he'd lose the Italian vote. Is Romney that afraid of losing the Irish vote by exposing one of the most horrible guys? I forget his name, Whitey Bulger's brother, who was, you know, you talk about the president of UMass.
Yeah.
Mitt ought to be touting that.
Billy.
Yeah, right. And Mitt should be touting that because Fred Thompson's already saying, I'm the tough law and order candidate, I'm Arthur Branch, and I'll be 10 times tougher in real life. Well, he's never gone up to corruption the way Mitt did in this case. So, people here, I hope you know that. That's all the negative things I've brought up. I hope that gets mentioned, too.
Is that a question or a statement?
Hi, I'm Dave Winder. I'd like to ask a question.
From Winder Dairy?
Yes. Yeah, Winder Dairy, Winder.
Used to drink lots of Winder milk when I grew up here.
I still do. My question is about foreign affairs.
You don't look like it, actually.
There are many, people in this country that believe that foreign affairs are probably as important or more important than domestic affairs in this coming election and in choosing our president. What I've seen so far from Mitt seems rather much like strident cliches, and I think some of our problems in the past have been that presidents and their closest advisors have not had a truly deep understanding of the culture in many foreign countries. And so my question is, how would you rank Mitt presently at this stage in his grasp of foreign cultures and what really needs to be done in foreign affairs? And do you think that he's going to get into some deeper study on this himself, because he hasn't really shown and talked about it, things that would indicate in-depth understanding up until now?
I guess the quick answer, though, there's not a quick answer here. It's a complicated answer. The quick part is the Council on Foreign Relations. What's the magazine? American? No, it's a foreign policy magazine. Foreign Affairs. In its last issue, the issue before, published the view of the world, the views of the world through the eyes of Mitt Romney, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama, and views on Iraq and the threat of terrorism continuing and so forth. And it's interesting if you lay the long range foreign policy goals of each one of those candidates side by side, they're remarkably similar. And it was strikingly so. And that surprised me in the sense that at least we've got the three most likely, the foreign affairs picked the three of them to talk to begin with. So they've already decided that Romney is going to win the Republican nomination. The fact that they all lined up says to me that this is refreshing, that we have people on both sides of the aisles who see the world very, very similarly. I think that's the short answer, and I draw your attention to that particular article. And if you want to call me or send me an email, I'll be happy to give you the coordinates of that. The second part is he's a real quick study. He's a consultant. He's got a JD from Harvard and an MBA from Harvard. He's no dummy. He's been consulting with international Fortune 1000, Fortune 100 companies for the last umpteen years, dealing with them on issues of global competitiveness. He knows the trade-off processes that's involved in good deal-making. Now, some people will argue that it doesn't have any application to politics, and I would argue just the opposite, that I think those kinds of experiences on an ongoing basis have real application to how do you bring together people who have 25 different opinions on a particular issue and get them all to compromise so you can reach some kind of consensus opinion that is to how to move forward. And that's exactly what's involved in complicated structures in business. Not to mention the fact that one of the major league foreign policy challenges we face going forward is how do we deal with emerging China? How do we deal with Canada? How do we deal with the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union? And those are all economic and business-driven kinds of issues where he does have some expertise. So those are two areas where I think he's a quick study. He seems to know what he's doing there. And probably the only person that may have a better hands-on feel for were foreign relations as Hillary. Barack certainly doesn't have that kind of feel that we know of, any experience that we know of. So we're looking at two equally inexperienced people in that regard. I was going to say something else, but I forgot what it was.
Thank you. I'm Bill Russell. I've been a political, political activist in Iowa for the last 40 years. And I think tomorrow night...
Are we related?
Not that I know of.
Are you from the Russells of Salt Lake?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm Canadian.
He's safe. The way he's,
yeah.
Richard,
I try to keep as much distance from Richard as I possibly can.
Okay.
But anyway, tomorrow night I think the 11 candidates on the Republican side will be effectively reduced to 4 or 5 because Romney should handily win the Iowa straw poll, Republican straw poll, tomorrow, which is basically the Iowa Republican Party ripping off the candidates and making them buy gobs of tickets and transporting people from all over the state to Ames. And he should win handily, but whoever comes in second, I think, will be about the only one that will survive after tomorrow night. Probably one of the religious right candidates will be that person. And then you've still got Thompson and Giuliani. I mean, that's McCain's basically going out of it. And last night it was said that he's going to have a hard time in South Carolina, but Romney is leading the Iowa polls consistently. I believe he's leading New Hampshire.
Big time.
And if that happens, everything turns over. The polls in all the rest of the states are dramatically affected by the results, especially of Iowa.
Yeah, South Carolina moved its primary up, though, just last night. So it's now the 8th of... Somewhere in January, I think they moved
ahead of Iowa. Iowa's the 14th.
Yeah, no, they're talking about Christmas in Iowa and New Hampshire's moving. This is nuts. So before this next questioner asks you, I should introduce her because she's a sandbagger. She's from Massachusetts. She runs the World Teacher Organization for Harvard University. She is a longtime friend of Mitt Romney's, and she's a longtime friend of mine as well. And she's going to be antagonistic. I just know it.
Helen Claire Sievers from Sudbury, Massachusetts. First of all, I'd like to compliment you for putting the best possible spin on the fact that Mitt
Romney... See, I can hear this coming. I'm not going to do it.
That it's all over the place on issues. And... there are only two ways I can look at this. One is that he's all over the place just to please people, in which case I find his integrity seriously lacking. Some of us really want to know what people think when they're running for president, and we vote for people because we actually care whether our troops are or are not in Iraq, whether there is or is not stem cell research. This is not fun and games. This stuff really matters to a lot of us. And when we cast a ballot, we want to know what people think. Personally, I'm a supporter of Barack Obama because I think he has the personal integrity that I can trust. When he speaks, he doesn't change what he says from organization to organization and state to state. For example, when he spoke at that megachurch in Rick Warren's megachurch in California on AIDS Day, the congregation came to him ahead of time and said, "We don't want him. It's quite a conservative church." And Rick Warren also had a conservative speaking. He said, "No, he's coming." And Obama, and I read his speech on the internet afterwards, he took all the same stances that these people were really against, but he knew how to phrase it and couch it and explain it in terms of things that people would understand. He used scriptural quotes, but his position never wavered. I know what I'm voting for in Barack Obama. I have no idea what I'm voting for in Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney himself... I'm asking the question.
Get to it. Hurry. You ought to see her in gospel doctrine class. She's just horrible.
If, as Mitt says, what happened to him was that he was wrong before when he was running in Massachusetts and now has had his epiphany and now believes all this stuff he's saying, which actually is contrary to somebody very close to him that told me where they identified a niche for him and he is saying what his handlers tell him to say, which I think is actually more the truth. But if he actually did have this big flop from one position to another, and then I would say, why would we trust somebody who, in his, you know, in his mature years as a servant in government, has changed so dramatically? How do we trust that he has the background, and everything else that would give him the wisdom to make good choices when he himself says he was so wrong only a few years ago? So how would you answer that? Which side do you think is really the real Mitt Romney? What is he telling us, the truth when he says he's changed, or is he just responding to whatever group is out there so he can amass whatever power he needs to gain this position? That's my question.
You know, it's always your friends and relatives that do you in. the answer to the question is, it's sort of what I said last night. It's a two-part answer, that if you're in the political game, you're in it to win. And once you've won, then you can be more your real person. And I'm not making this up. Practically every candidate that I've read about in years past has said the same thing. You got to run to win, and then you got to, once you've won, then you can lead. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I understand why people say that, and I think we're seeing a lot of that going on here. And Helen Clare, I refer you to last night's meeting with a gay lesbian organization that was attended by Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and all the other Democratic candidates. And the opening line was, here they all are, let the pandering begin. And Barack was there, right with the best of them, pandering away. I happen to like Barack too, but I'm saying it's pandering is part of the political process. It isn't a wonderful part of it.
It depends the degree.
It depends on the degree, I think Mitt is looking over his shoulder, seeing how his father got eaten alive for speaking his mind, and he's letting the handlers handle him so he doesn't misstep like his father did. And I'll say one thing, and excuse me for making you wait, but I look back at 1968, and I say to myself, I was a big George Romney fan. I became a Democrat after George Romney got kicked out of the race. And I got into some ferocious arguments at time with some of the people who brought George Romney down about why did they do that, and hadn't we made the world a much better place? And I say to myself, would the world have been better off had we gotten George Romney as President of the United States as opposed to Richard Nixon? The answer is, we wouldn't have had Watergate, Nora Ephron, wouldn't have married Dustin Hoffman, and Bob Woodward wouldn't wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and see Bob Redford. So I look back on that time and say, I can understand why Mitt looks at his own challenges now. And so and he made this comment in New Hampshire a few weeks back. What's going to keep you who's going to keep you from getting the nomination? And he said, I'm my own biggest enemy. If I say something stupid, that's gonna be what's gonna create the problems for me. So my take on that is, he's very frightened about misstepping, and therefore he's allowing himself to be overhandled. What you saw in Iowa was, in my view, the real Mitt. I've had some up close and testy encounters with the real Mitt, and what I saw in Iowa is more like that than what I see on the stump. What I saw on the stump when he was running for the Senate as well. I know that hasn't been totally responsive to your question, Helen Clare, but it's as good as I can do.
We have 5 minutes left, so we can probably take both of these, and that'll have to be it.
Rats.
On the Charlie Rose show, I think it was Judy Woodruff, who was maybe in for Charlie Rose. I'm not sure that usually works, but she was interviewing Mitt Romney and said, what about this whole thing where in Mormonism, the Father has a father, God has a material body, and Jesus is returning in Missouri? And he said, well, you haven't exactly got this right. And he said, the most unusual thing we believe, he really said this,
yeah,
the most unusual thing we believe is in the Great Flood and Noah's Ark. And I made a whole video about that called Mitt Romney and Mormonism on YouTube.
And I think at the end of the day, for me, it's like I'm a right-leaning evangelical. This is sort of a carryover from last night. Somebody mentioned institutional jealousy. If he were to get elected, would it sort of validate, give legitimacy to his religion? If he would stand up and say, look, I believe God lives on a planet next to a star base called Kolob. God has a bunch of wives. Might be having sex with them. I would have any problems, you know, worrying about legitimacy being granted Mormonism. But if he can't be honest about his Mormonism, even on basic issues, I would vote for the guy if I knew I could trust him. But if he won't be honest about religious issues, how am I supposed to believe he's going to
be? Did you say you're an evangelical? Or
yes, evangelical, right-leaning, crazy guy.
You look like it. Yeah. You had that wild-eyed look in you. Well, the answer to the question is, I don't think you could get any two Mormons to agree on what those doctrines are. And if we wanted to talk about what do we believe the nature of God is, we could be here for days.
The most unusual thing about Mormonism is the Great Flood.
Well, the most unusual thing about Christianity generally is arguably the Great Flood.
You have already talked about Gene McCarthy and Hubert Humphrey and the schism that occurred in the Democratic Party in 1968. Do you foresee a possibility of a similar schism in the Republican Party coming into next year over Iraq? And if that should occur, who do you think the two Republican contenders might be?
Well, the historical answer is that Mitt Romney's dad came to prominence in the Republican Party because of a schism in the Republican Party when Barry Goldwater stole a convention in San Francisco, and George stomped out with Mitt in tow. A wonderful ironic event. And then managed to recapture that's where he became the leading candidate in 68, was what he had done with the Rockefeller people in 64 from that point on. So the answer is, yeah, I said last night that I think that the primary election this year is going to demonstrate clearly how much clout the Christian right, the radical Christian right, and I assume you're not part of the radical Christian right, or maybe you are, I don't know. Do radical Christians wear T-shirts?
Joseph Light got true. It's as good as it gets.
Good. It's going to demonstrate how much political clout do they really have, how together are they, and how doctrinaire in lockstep are they? My view is they're not, and so we could have a Republican Party that emerges at the end of the pipe that's quite a bit more middle of the roadish than what it is now. But I'm a Democrat, so it's really hard. I'm more of a Democrat. I'm really actually an independent, but I'm more of a liberal than I am a conservative. I'm paying attention to the Republican side because Mitt's running, and he was my stake president.
Then that means you see a third party candidacy. There's been talk of Michael Bloomberg, former Republican, running Chuck Hagel, current Republican senator from Nebraska. Those people anti-Iraq war, they might run together as a third party.
Well, I'm an old guy, and I've been around for a number of third party activities, and I, being a realist, I'm trying to be a realist. I don't see much of a chance at this stage for a third party surviving. Well, it's been too bad in other years too, where that could have happened. When McCarthy lost it in 68, that was one of them. One thing I wanted to say on foreign policy, I just remember what I was going to say. The one thing I think is really, really interesting, and I think Mitt this week is meeting with a new president of France. I haven't done the absolute red check on this, but I think that Mitt Romney and Ann Romney, both of whom speak French fluently, will be the first president and first lady, for sure, who are fluent in a foreign language since... Well, what did he speak? No. German? I have been a jelly donut. I think he'll be the first president to be fluent in a foreign language since Woodrow Wilson, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it was one of the Hoover Coolidge era. But a long time. And wouldn't it be nice to have a president that actually was conversant in a foreign language, even if he's bad-mouthing France as he goes? But the French prime minister is in New Hampshire this week, and I assume he's going to be meeting with both Bush and with Romney. Interesting development. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your time and for coming.
Thank you. There will be tapes available of this session soon, later on today.